agencies, including the FDA's Council on Scientific Affairs, Center for Evidence-Based Dentistry, and ADA Product Evaluation Labs. Dan was the FDA representative to the Minamata Convention Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee meetings. Dr. Meyer.
Hey, thank you very much, Scott. That's ADA representative, not FDA. FDI. That's international or the World Dental Federation. So, anyhow, thank you very much for being here. I was asked to talk about the impact of the convention as it relates to the profession, our providers, patients we serve, and certainly the public we serve as well. Again, Scott mentioned I'm from the American Dental Association. I didn't know how to disclose whether or not I've had relationships. I've had relationships. Anyhow, I don't think I have any conflicts of interest, although working with the ADA, I have been exposed to a lot of the agencies we've already talked about. I also had the privilege of being involved with the Minamata Convention, the development of it. I participated with the FDI, the World Dental Federation, which was a non-government organization, along with the International Association for Dental Research and the International Dental Manufacturers. And we were able to be observers at that meeting and actually provide interventions at times as non-government organizations. So I guess I do have relationships, but no conflicts of interest. I've really appreciated the discussions. When I've talked about this in the past, there's always been some confusion about the patient care issues related to dental amalgam and then the environmental issues as they relate to mercury and dental products. Mark, it was interesting when you were giving your presentation, I noticed that you had mercury amalgam. And I leaned over to Howard and I said, gee, that's a little bit of a misnomer because amalgam really is an alloy that's made up of mercury. And we've had to deal with a lot of individuals that have had misperceptions about what dental amalgam really is, what mercury amalgam is, what silver fillings are. We like to refer to it as dental amalgam. There are different forms of mercury, as you mentioned. Some are more toxic than others. We deal in the intermetallic mercury alloys arena. And it was interesting. We were dealing with the Environmental Protection Agency one time, and we've done a lot of advocacy with them. We've done a lot of work with them. And at one meeting, they said, because the ADA does a lot of research, we have our own laboratories in Chicago and out at the Papenbarger Research Center, which is where Ray Bowen was, which is one of our activities. And anyhow, the EPA said, you know, have you ever thought about developing a metallic material or something that would bind mercury before it's released into the environment? And our answer was like, well, that's dental amalgam. We didn't think that was a good solution, and they didn't either. I've been involved with the Minamata Convention. If you need more information, there is a website. We've already addressed many of the issues that I was thinking about addressing with the Minamata Convention, so I won't try to be redundant here. But it's been a very interesting process for a dentist to go to a United Nations meeting. Has been something that is unlike any other meetings I've been at. We've already mentioned that the treaty will go into effect when 50 countries ratified it. I think Linda already mentioned that 9 as of today have done it. Stay tuned for that. We've been trying to monitor this very closely. There was a meeting, the INC6, the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee meeting, that took place actually from the 3rd through the 7th of November, so a week and a half ago, in which they're working out some of the details of the treaty. So the reason a lot of countries haven't ratified it yet is they're still talking about funding, determining the cost of improvising and putting into action a lot of the elements of the treaty. Again, I mentioned IADR, FDI, WHO, International Dental Manufacturers. That's what those acronyms are up on the top. FDI is the World Dental Federation. It's composed of approximately 120 dental associations and then another 30, 40 members. And it's basically an association of professional dental organizations. They've been involved with this issue from the inception. of course, there's been a lot of research that's been done on dental amalgam from the patient care point of view, but also from the environmental point of view. I was also involved with a World Health Organization consensus statement that dates back to 1997 when they were taking positions on dental amalgam. And then there have been a lot of policies by multiple professional organizations, not only in the oral healthcare disciplines, but the general healthcare disciplines on mercury and dental amalgam. And again, for lack of time, I won't go into that. In November of 2009, the World Health Organization hosted a meeting that was comprised of the United Nations Environmental Program representatives, the International Dental Federation, International Association for Dental Research, and National Dental Associations, and a whole host of environmentalists. I also had the privilege of participating in that meeting, and what came out of that was a publication in 2009, which was the Future Use of Materials for Dental Restoration. And basically, it was the World Health Organization's position on not only dental amalgam, but all the restoratives, and certainly with an emphasis on sealants and preventive techniques, too, and the use of fluoride. I was also involved with a workshop at King's College back in 2012, in which the IADR, in anticipation of this Minamata Convention being signed, put together an extensive research program that was primarily focused on prevention, disease management, risk assessment, but as it related to dental restorative materials, and really brought in top researchers from throughout the world to say, okay, what is the state of the art? Where are we headed from here? They also brought in representatives from the United Nations Environmental Program, and in fact, David Piper, who was the lead representative as it related to mercury and oral health care, he and I presented at that meeting in a joint panel. And again, I mentioned that at the beginning of December, or in the beginning of November, excuse me, there's already been progress made on the Minamata Convention, and that will continue. Well, there will be subsequent meetings coming. Some of the key points, certainly with the Minamata Convention, is the focus is really on health. I have to say, with that focus, that really has become a very complicated issue, because all of us here are healthcare providers too. All of us are stewards of the environment. All of us are concerned that mercury is a very toxic material. Nobody's in denial of that. But we also recognize that not only in the United States, but throughout the world, there are a great many people in need. Worldwide, out of 7 billion people, there are 3.9 billion people that don't have access or can't afford routine oral health care. And so how do we deliver that care to the populations that need it most? And then if we look at our own situation here in the United States, and we brought up the concern about CMS, and again, with limited resources, and especially for oral health care, how do we provide effective, safe care to those that need it most? And so with this convention on mercury, and then we in dentistry use materials that not only contain mercury, but also contain other toxic elements or other toxic materials, how do we, as good stewards of the environment, protectors of health, interact with these types of negotiations? In the Minamata Convention, they listed 9 provisions. And it was interesting, in this Minamata Convention, that was basically an environmental convention focused on mercury, we, as oral health care providers, were actually able to make sure that not only did we address the dental amalgam issues, but we addressed dental research issues, and we addressed the real issue, which is prevention of the disease. My concern is, as a profession, we have spent a lot of time treating teeth, but we have to recognize that dental caries is a disease, and it's a disease process. And how is it that we prevent the disease instead of just treating the destruction of the disease. So you had now a convention that was focused on, again, eliminating a very toxic material, rightfully so. We were all supportive of that as oral health care providers, but we were also concerned that with the current materials that are available in dentistry, again, most of the world is afflicted with oral health care problems that we need to resolve. And we also recognize that we can't drill and fill our way out of this no matter what the material is that's being used. So in the convention, there were 9 provisions that were established that were directed at oral health care, which was very unique for this convention. And basically, the parties were encouraged, the stakeholders, to include 2 or more of these measures to advance the intent of this convention. And I broke it down into 5 different categories, and I'll go through them very quickly with you. And again, it's very hard to talk about such a complex issue in such a short time frame that we have today. But basically, the first category was prevention and health promotion. That's what we're all about as a profession. We don't want to treat disease. We want to assess the risk. We want to prevent the disease. We want to manage the disease. Again, so much of the discussions about dental amalgam have been the debate about the different restorative materials. We need to get away from that and really start looking at the disease process. So the first objective is setting national objectives aiming at dental caries prevention and health promotion, thereby minimizing the need for dental restoration. Dental restoration, any dental restoration. So let's focus on caries prevention and health promotion. Not oral health promotion necessarily, but health promotion. And I skipped the second one. And then setting national objectives at minimizing the use of dental restorative materials. And then we need to promote the cost-effective and clinically effective mercury-free alternatives. We're already doing that. We're working with the Dental Educators Association. We're working with CODA in the United States. We're working with the dental schools to do that. And then we need to educate and train our professionals on what safe and effective materials are. We also need to do advanced research. So dental materials research. NIH has just funded 5 new research programs. I think it's totaling about $6 million to look at alternative materials. That's the action that's coming out of this convention. And then the financial incentives. And again, we already addressed the issue. Encouraging third-party payers, including public payers, to use alternative materials, and for those providers to get reimbursed for those materials. And then, of course, the best management practices, and restricting the use of dental amalgam to its encapsulated form, which is something that we in the United States have been advocating, and the FDA has gone along with us for years and years and years. In addition to all of this, we've been working very closely, again, with the FDI. And what they've been doing is putting together a whole series of documents. They first put together a series of documents to advocate for the intention of the Minamata Convention, to get oral health care providers to understand the implications of it and to establish guidelines. At their last meeting in 2014 in India, they also established implementation guidelines, not only for the National Dental Associations, but for toolkits for individual providers, too, to actually embrace the concept of prevention and risk assessment and disease management and get away from the debate on simply what are the best restoratives. The challenges are really addressing the global health care needs. And again, attending to the populations that need dental materials the most, in addition to the general health considerations. We need to look at the current production routes, as we're already doing, but it's not only on dental amalgam, scrap amalgam, and mercury, it's also on all the other materials, including the bisphenol A, including fluoride, which is often addressed in, and we need to look at that scientifically and sound scientific, or the triclosans, or the polyethylene microbeads that are getting into the environment. We need to look at our impact on the environment. We've done a series of tests and a series of modeling. We've hired engineers to look at different modeling. I will say, when we're talking about patient care issues and provision of care at the individual or public health areas, we in oral health care do an excellent job. Our studies are designed completely different than environmental studies that rely basically on modeling. And so you get wide variation on the impact of mercury or dental amalgam on the environment. But we also know that with amalgam separation technology, with publicly owned treatment works, we can remove most of the waste, but not all the waste, and we need to do better than that. As we get down this path, one of the things that we've talked about is the natural contributors of mercury to the environment, the volcanoes, forest burning, mining, just the natural elements that are already present. But then there's also the man-made as well. But when you look at overall, dentistry is contributing less than 0.5% to the mercury contribution to the environment. But that's not good enough. We can't say, well, that's a very minor contribution. That's enough. We need to eliminate whatever contribution we can or minimize the risk to the environment. On the man-made side, on the surface water side, dentists are contribute more and more and continuing to do it because, as Mark had pointed out, other corporations, other businesses, industry is diminishing their input into the environment. And so we as dentists need to do the same. We've done the best management practices, which we've had in implementation for a long time. That's been adopted worldwide by a number of dental organizations. And part of that is to get recycling programs for bulk mercury, chairside traps, amalgam separators. The ADA entered into a memorandum of understanding with the EPA in 2007 to mandate that all dental offices have dental separators or amalgam separators. With part of our best management practices are the do's and don'ts. We've done studies in our own ADA laboratories on the types of separators. Most separators have an efficiency of upwards of 96%. We've looked at them as they're new, as they're old, when they're empty, when they're filled, and we've looked at all the different types of separators as well. We've also looked at the cost to the industry on eliminating amalgam and using the current alternatives, and the costs are huge. We're talking billions of dollars. So when we talk about why don't we just have Medicaid use resin composites instead of amalgams, the cost implications are huge for a number of reasons, not only just the cost of materials, but the cost of placing the materials, the techniques associated with it, but the frequency then of replacing resin composites versus amalgams, because you have to replace them more often. And then we've looked at the patient impact considerations. More frequent visits. Again, if we get away from the treatment modalities and focus on the prevention and risk assessment in disease management modalities, that's when we'll grab hold of this issue. We need to get away from the debate on the longevity of restorations. This, I have to show you, is the occupational risk of exposure to mercury from dental offices. And with best management practices, we've gotten the mercury levels down to the same as the general population for the providers. And again, final thing we need to do is look at dental caries as a chronic disease process, as a prevalent disease that needs to be stopped. And again, we're not going to stop it with whatever restorations we're using. We need to get beyond that. And with that, my time has run out, and I'll stop.
Thank you very much. We have about 1 minute for questions for Dr. Meyer or for actually any of the panelists.
issue among populations who may be practicing what you mentioned, that I can't remember, and eating a lot of fish.
Well, see, I'm totally with you, Alex. To me, first of all, it's a privilege for me to be at this meeting because we need to be working together. We are too insulated as a dental profession, and we need to look at ourselves as part of the collaborative practice and working together as part of the healthcare team. And certainly, I would advocate that should be done. And again, we need to address the mercury issue, not just as it relates to oral health care, let's get beyond that, and really focus on it as a national problem and an international problem.
Yeah, any final questions? Well, please join me in thanking them, the panelists, for the wonderful session.
I mean, that's really important. And Clay, again, I'm glad that the association is really looking at this issue from multi points of view. One of the things that I kind of challenged the United Nations on was this all started originally with the artisanal gold mining operations because, I mean, 55 million people in the world were being harmed and exposed to very high levels of mercury. And you mentioned, you know, the burning and the processing of the gold. If they were really serious about this, we should be looking at gold mining. If they're really concerned about the environmental impact of and just protecting the environment, gold mining just rapes the environment. I mean, the amount of land you have to destroy to get a few ounces of gold, and gold has really kind of outlived its usefulness, except in a lot of the Asian countries where it's being used for jewelry and non-essential purposes. Although I see maybe I can probably make direct comments, make a big size.
I absolutely agree. I think the other thing to think about is a lot of times illegal gold mining that's happening, and so it's very hard to even find this population.
It is.
To measure the amount that they're supposed to and it's regulated and given them.
Yeah.
So it's almost a whole new thing for
you. Yeah, National Geographic did a great overview of the gold mining operations, I guess about 40 years ago, and it